This is Annuity Straight Talk. Since 2008, your host, Brian Anderson, has helped clients nationwide navigate the complex market for annuities. With Brian's assistance, hundreds of clients have achieved a profitable and secure retirement. I would know, because Brian has answered many of my questions concerning annuities and retirement planning. So that you can benefit as well, let's get started. Here's Brian.
Hello and welcome everyone to the Annuity Straight Talk Podcast, episode number 80. Brian Anderson, your host, founder and creator of AnnuityStraightTalk.com, talking about everything important for retirees in this day and age. I'm happy to do it. Been working on it a long time, and by popular request, we've got one of everybody's favorite guests is back, John Balmer in Southern California. Hey, buddy, how you doing?
Brian, thanks for having me back. How's everything going? It's good to see you.
Not bad. We can pretend everybody asks, hey, have you talked to John lately? What's he doing? Yeah, I talk to John all the time. He just hasn't been on the podcast in a while.
That's right. Man, what an exciting week, right? Lots of news going on.
Well, we wanted to get you back, and I've tried to stay ahead of these podcasts, and they got to be produced before they air, before they go out to the list and all that stuff. And a lot of times what you're doing is kind of timely information, what you can offer. So I apologize. Didn't want to give you the short end of the stick there, buddy, but we got some really good stuff going on in the last week. How about it?
Yeah, it's been amazing. Lots of excitement in the markets, lots of excitement, you know, from a banking perspective. We can touch on that if you want, if any of your listeners have any curiosity in what's happening with the current state of affairs of the U.S. banking system. And we talk a little bit of markets, talk a little bit about safety and security and return on your money.
Well, yeah, I think that's all really good stuff. And, you know, I'm kind of a cynical guy, as you know. And I see this stuff like, well, took long enough. Obviously, that was going to happen. Everybody thinks banks are so damn safe.
That's right.
And then all of a sudden, I read a headline. It was 44 hours it took for it to collapse. And it's like somebody had to know about it ahead of time, right?
So, 15th largest bank in the United States, second largest bank failure in history. Over $200 billion in deposits of a bank, Silicon Valley Bank, based in Santa Clara, mostly servicing the technology. But they actually had a pretty broad range of business. I'm pretty surprised that all they're talking about is technology. Failed. They didn't open on Friday.
So the stock didn't open, right? And then we've got also, it's not just that the bank goes down, but all the other businesses that were borrowing from the bank or using the bank for deposits are going to be hammered. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what we saw Thursday was a real contagion effect. We saw First Republic Bank drop over 30%. We saw Signature Bank of New York, that was down over 25-30%. In fact, the regulators today in New York shut that bank down for fear of systemic collapse.
What is today, John? Clear it up.
Today is Sunday, March 12th.
Yeah, so we're recording this about 4 days before it comes out, 2 days after the big news came out, just so everybody knows that they're working on weekends to get this done, right?
Yeah, I think the Fed and Janet Yellen and the regulators really had to, you know, work double time on this. So Silicon Valley Bank no longer exists as it states. Assets will be bought up. Signature Bank was just closed today. You're talking about people in L.A. here were lining up at First Republic Bank, which is a boutique bank that serves high net worth individuals and businesses. There's videos surfacing online of people lining up at that bank. And that's typically, you know, a $250,000 to $500,000 minimum to open an account there. You just had a PacWest, which is a small regional bank here in Southern California, lose 60% of its value on Thursday and Friday. So there was a lot of craziness going on. And it's, really kind of flashed me back to Lehman Brothers in 2008, where it was there one day and gone the next. So
it's funny you say that, John, because I was reading articles this morning to get, you know, kind of prep for what we're going to talk about. And then I talked to my Wall Street insider, somewhat, the guy that knows things. And I found an article on Bloomberg about Lehman Brothers, where it's funny, the bank collapsed and there's a few dudes that are still working for the bank because they continue to have loans, they've got assets, and there's a few people that need to stick around and manage that. But it's a half a dozen guys or something like that, that are still kind of like unwinding the bank, even what, 8 or 15 years later, something like that.
I wouldn't doubt it. It's the dramatic collapse of this bank was, it was just proper. This really kind of can be applied to the regular everyday retirement investor. You have to have proper risk management in place. And the bank, they didn't have a chief risk officer for almost 8 months while they tripled their deposits over the last 3 or 4 years. And it was just a mismanagement of their funds. They took a very large bet on some government securities that, as rates rised unprecedentedly over the last 12 months, they got caught on the wrong side of the trade. And they just didn't manage risk very well. And so it kind of really comes back to what you and I do for our clients, is managing risk.
Can you imagine what would have happened, John, if this was an insurance company? Or a series of insurance companies, because it was Silicon Valley Bank. And then it's a few other ones that you mentioned are going to be, and the fallout's enormous, and it's going to keep cascading for a while. You imagine if it was a handful of the biggest insurance companies, what people would be saying?
Oh, it would be total chaos. I believe that.
And then everybody's going to still go by, buy a CD because banks are safe, right?
Yeah. The sad part, and we can talk about reserve requirements, but, you talk about FDIC insurance and they raised it from 100,000 to 250,000 after the great financial crisis. But you really have to talk about your bank, your regular old bank, whether it be a money center bank like JP Morgan Chase or Bank of America or your local, a lot of the deposits across the country are held by, regional and community banks that are in your town. And they take those deposits and they rely on that deposit base to go out to the Fed and make loans. So they might keep 10 cents on the dollar on deposit for you in your account versus an insurance company. Brian, you can really touch on their reserve requirements. It's much more stringent.
Oh, yeah. It's essentially 1-to-1, right? It's in excess of $1 of assets for every dollar of liabilities. It's not even the same thing. It's totally different. And what I've said to a lot of people is like, if you want to be safe, especially now, because there's a lot of headwinds economically, aside from this, correct? We got the stock market that's kind of flat for a couple of years. There was a nice rally at the beginning of the year. Everybody thinks, the market's going, it's coming down. We're not even close to being done. And nobody that I've talked to thinks that, a real optimistic future, even short term or long term, what's going to happen? There's a lot of economic headwinds, even without the banking issues that we saw last week. And I've always said, like, if you want to be safe, you put your money in companies that have money. Insurance companies are the only ones that have money. The rest of them are just leveraged to the hilt.
Yeah, I would agree. And this particular bank was leveraged. Back in 2006 and 2007, I actually worked at a late stage venture capital investment bank prior to joining BlackRock. And the one thing that we found in dealing with Silicon Valley Bank, this is not a fly-by-night institution. They've been around for 20, 30 years. But we found that a lot of the companies that we worked with, they were required to bank based on any loans that they received from Silicon Valley Bank. Their venture capital partners who were funding these operations of these companies that were hoping to go public, they were tied at the hip with Silicon Valley Bank. Literally, you had to keep all of your money there. So that means payroll, your credit line, your 401k, your wealth management for their executives. They had a real niche and they had a real kind of stronghold on that particular market. And they've grown and grown and grown as, more and more companies in Silicon Valley are, startups and more funding has been allocated to venture capital. It's just been crazy growth. And they improperly managed risk, and now they're no longer in business.
Right. My, how things change, right? How quickly they change.
Absolutely. You know, what a thing, what an event like this really does is, you know, when you think about the banking system in the United States, sure, we've got a lot of backstops, but it's a confidence game. And if U.S. consumers or depositors don't have confidence in their banks, you know, it could destroy the whole system. We, you know, we're based on a confidence type of system. You get people lining up on a Saturday, taking their money out of the bank. I mean, real fear starts to grip people. There was rumors last night about Charles Schwab Bank. I don't think that they're true, and obviously just a rumor, but you know, people were talking about the solvency of the banking arm of Charles Schwab. Some real contagion could have happened. I know the Fed just stepped in. They said that they were going to backstop 100% of the deposits that exceeded the FDIC threshold of 250. I mean, I have a friend of mine is actually the chief accounting officer at Roku. Roku is, you know, reported to have over $500 billion, $500 million at Silicon Valley Bank. That's uninsured. Now, hopefully the Fed follows through or the banking system and they make all those people whole. I mean, you'd hate to see people get hurt, but are we looking at another bank bailout? I don't know. Is it warranted?
Yeah, well, that's what one thing I read, because right before we recorded this, my guy in New York sent me the Treasury release basically saying they're going to make sure that depositors, your everyday people, are, but the unsecured creditors are not protected. And essentially, it was kind of like, I think individuals were insured, but businesses were not, is how I read that. Does that sound about right?
I haven't read the releases. They just came out. I know that they're running some stuff nonstop. But I was mostly listening to what potentially could happen last night and most of all day yesterday. It kind of consumed my whole day. And I know that some news has come out, which is it's interesting because, you know, had they not come out, stock market would have completely crashed. And it looks like futures are pointing to the positive, which is good. Kind of a sigh of relief. But, you know, we can kind of talk about what's gone on in the market in the first quarter since the beginning of the year. It seemed like we just completely pivot and we had this race up first couple months of the year. And then we've kind of given a lot of that back. We can talk about that if you'd like. I can show you some charts.
I think that's a great idea, John. And in light of what's happened, that kind of like, you know, recent events got us together today. If you're willing to, I know everybody would love to hear you talk about what you think. You've got your own clients that have been, I guess, resistant to your analysis in some ways, right? Risk management, because that's what we're talking about, risk management, something you're very good at. And since I've known you, it's not been a really great time to be an investor. It's kind of up and down and flat most of the way, to be honest with you. So whatever you can share with our listeners, everybody would certainly appreciate that. And then, of course, I'm going to add my commentary along the way because I like to do that.
Sure. Yeah, you know, we've seen inflation cool off a little bit. We've seen the dollar lose some of its strength. I mean, the dollar had really rallied last year, which was really tough for the markets. We saw rates continue to spike. And as we, you know, in the beginning of the year, I would say going back to October, we started almost a mini bull market run. We had a pretty strong go from October. I would say, you know, traded sideways in November, popped up in December, and then just really ran January and February, really ran pretty hard in the markets. And, you know, I was caught flat-footed. I think a lot of investors were, you know, they were getting nervous that they were missing out on returns. And, you know, I just don't think it's over. I think the long-term is we go lower because of what you talked about, a lot of the economic headwinds. And I can share a chart and show, you know, we had a classic bull trap in the S&P 500 where we had this massive rip up in January to the upside. And we've pretty much given most of that back. So I could share a chart or two with you if you'd like, kind of show you what I'm talking about. And then if you have questions, or your listeners have questions, obviously they know where to find you and you can always have a chat.
And yeah, why don't you do that? Because I think everybody would like it. And it's my opportunity to say you're not allowed to reach out to John Ballmer. He's not here to advertise for services. Of course, the dishonest people will sneak around and go search him and find him and pretend that they just ran into him, which is okay. Hell of a good dude. If you want to talk to him, you call me first. I'll qualify you a little bit because he doesn't need to be wasting his time. And that's how we do it here. So why don't you let us know what we're looking at, John?
Yeah, so this is the daily chart of the S&P 500. I'm just going to take it back, zoom in, and back to October. We saw those October lows, and you can kind of see that we started to form a new channel here. Really kind of gave some back in December, pretty significantly. But again, a lot of that was due to hitting this red line. And if I can make it a little bit thicker, you can see this red line. This is the long-term downward trend. If we're taking a look at it, this is this January 4th of 2022 up here. You have these peaks and valleys, but you can see it was not until late January that we actually broke through that downward trend. And that's a good thing. But you can see this red, skinny red line here. That's the 200-day moving average. It's a key indicator that I look at a lot. And I'm more of a technical trader, technical analyst, than I am a fundamental. We do keep a good eye on the macroeconomic environment and the fundamentals of the market. But a lot of this is technical trading. And as you can see, you had a low here in October. Then you had a high here, bounced off here. But then this is what I really kind of look at. You had a higher low here in this yellow. From a technical standpoint, I didn't breach my October low. So that kind of gives me an area of interest. And you had a lot of congestion in there. And I can kind of zoom in on it for you here. You had a lot of this back and forth congestion, right? Anywhere between, 376 and 385 on the S&P 500, or the SPY, which is the S&P, the spider ETF that mimics the S&P 500. A lot of congestion. Didn't really know where we wanted to go. And then you had a little bit of good news. Rates kind of backed off, and you just have this January where we started taking off to the upside. And this is where people got caught flat-footed. Maybe we had a little bit too much cash. But, my long-term outlook is something like this. And you can kind of see on that line, because you still have a declining 200-day moving average. And we have a classic bull trap. We went above that indicator or that long-term trend line. We traded sideways, and we've pretty much failed here. So now we have a new high. We have a higher low. But now we failed to breach this high. And so now you can see that last week was pretty brutal. We had, four down days of the week. And these are pretty strong downward candles, let alone we've got a banking crisis right now. So, the market will probably pop up, maybe test this area right here. And then I would say maybe, it'll trend down over just due to the headwinds. I could be wrong. But that's kind of how I'm playing my cards. I know I have a lot of clients that they really wanted to be in the market, and they were not necessarily worried about more downside. And that's okay. If we want to put them in the market, that's up to them and their risk tolerance, and they can look out. But, for those clients that are a little bit more concerned with what's going on, the big picture, I still think that there's opportunities to get in at a better price. I'll kind of leave it at that. We'll just keep it simple.
No, it's a classic case. I don't know. Everybody, you must be taking a bunch of heat, I suppose, for, missing out on some of the little things. But, what I say, classic case of everybody wants to think they're in it for the long term, but they let short-term events dictate their, short-term events cause, emotional reactions to certain things.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I have a lot of conversations with people who might be sitting on 10 or 20% cash, and we've been putting it to work over time strategically. And you had a couple days last week where people were just absolutely panicked, thinking this is the last time that they were going to get in at the lows. And unfortunately, my sentiment is I don't think that's the case. I think we're going to see potentially, and I don't know whether it's now or in 2 years, but I would say, I'm just going to share this again, Brian.
Yeah, go ahead.
Unless something dramatically changes, I would say my long-term forecast of the market looks something like this. And here's your COVID low right here.
going bold, making it public. You okay with me publishing this on Thursday?
Yeah. Yeah. And I could be completely wrong. That's why, you know, a lot of people are still going to be invested in the market, but we're going to have some dry powder to where if we start to trade down this area, and maybe I'm wrong, you have a really, really strong area of resistance right here or support right there at that red line. That's the COVID high, pre-COVID high. You know, you got really close to down there in October. Yeah, you could get back down there again for sure. You could get down to the 3,400 level, the 3,600 level. It's not out of the question. Did we break that? Got a lot of area to go, but it's possible.
Right.
Or it could happen in the next recession. I don't know. I mean, I don't know what the definition of recession is anymore.
Well, everybody likes to talk about, you know, I did my, you know, you weren't involved in this, John, but I did my little podcast about Ken Fisher, and they talk about, oh, over time, the stock market always goes up. You know, you take out the 100 best days in the market and you get next to nothing. But we've had some really big years. We've had a lot of volatility in the past 20 years where we've had giant losses, great bull runs following that. And I think a lot of people, you know, a lot of our clients, a lot of people we talk to, you know, certainly anybody under the age of 60 doesn't really remember the years of stagnation in the 70s. There have been long periods of time where the stock market doesn't really do anything, right?
Right. Absolutely.
And so this whole bull market run is a fairly recent phenomena in the last 20, 30 years where you just get bull markets and, oh, the market corrects and it's going to bounce right back and go higher. If you look at the long-term charts, it's like that's pretty recent with respect to a lot of things. So,
I mean, I can show you the long-term chart if you're interested as well.
Yeah. Well, we can always do that later. We don't have to do it all now. Whatever you think is interesting to people, John.
Well, if I look at it, and I'll just share it one more time.
Okay.
You can see right here, this is a long-term chart of the S&P. And you can see, this is your 2000 peak. You can see the market traded in this range. That was a lost decade. You literally did not make any money. You got chopped up a lot.
Yeah, that's a 10-year period.
Yeah, this was really your primary uptrend, your bull market. And you had a little chop in there along the way. You had a little flat to down 2015, 2016. You had the Fed tried to raise rates in 2018. You had that December sell-off that's projected right here. And you obviously had COVID. I wouldn't consider that a recession at all. I just think, you know, that was a pandemic. But, you know, we ripped higher. But if you take a look at the market, look at all this chop right here. And if you're an investor right now in this, and you think that this latest rally is the start of a new bull market, you know, you've got to think twice. And this is the weekly chart.
So back out again, just so we can see all that. Because this is what I've been talking about for a long time, right? And if you look at, whatever. Like the entire exponential curve in the stock market happened in the last 30 years, all of it.
Yeah.
Right? And then if you look at like the last year and 3 months, which is, you know, the top, and then all that chop you were talking about. I mean, if you compare even the lowest point in that top to the beginning point, it's insane. Like is the yield behind us? Or are we going to have, you think it's going to keep going
up?
Yeah. I mean, like a chart is a living, breathing thing, correct?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, you can read the chart and understand how it goes, but everything is right in that area. And so many people are resistant to like protecting money and selling out. Oh, well, because we're off the highs. It's like, look how much higher it is, which is, again, why I said to people, a lot of people that are retiring now, you have more money than you've ever had, and the stock market's higher than it's ever been. And I'll still say that because look at we're off the top and it still doesn't make a dent in the climb we've had in the last 20 years.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I could certainly illustrate that for you. From the bottom in 2008 to the peak, the market was up 658%.
So the bottom in 2008 to where it's at now, what's that?
To where it is now, it's you're still at 515%.
Yeah, in 15 years.
15 years. pretty dang good rate of return. The problem is that not everyone gets in at the top. Not everyone gets in at the bottom. And so, I mean, if I just draw it from here, you know, at the low, the S&P was down 27% over the last year. That's the drawdown. We're still 19% off the high. Should we go down to the COVID low, which I think long-term, you know, you're 50% off the high.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty significant. So who knows if that's going to happen? I mean, we're not here to make predictions. No one has a crystal ball, but you know, it all comes back to proper risk management. And this is something that you and I always talk about proper risk management in a portfolio, whether you're investing in stocks or bonds, or whether you like annuities or cash or real estate, you have to always, always have proper risk management.
That's all we do. I can tell you all my clients who bought annuities 20 years ago aren't worried about this crap right now. John, you and I do different things, but we work together because I believe that there needs to be equity exposure for upside growth, but you need to do it in the right way. And you also understand the value of annuities in a portfolio. So that's why we work together well. Anyway, I appreciate you coming by today to explain some of these things to us and chat about the bank failures.
Yeah. Brian, you know, it's funny. I was just thinking, had that bank $21 billion in an annuity, just putting it in the 10-year treasury, they would still be around today.
We wouldn't even be talking about it. Yeah. So there's a lesson, although that was $21 billion and most of our clients, well, none of my clients have that much, but annuities do help in retirement. If you want to stay around out of the mess, that's the thing. You got an annuity right now. Yeah. Forget about it, right? Don't worry about it. But hopefully you're not one of those guys lined up outside the bank trying to get your money out, waiting for the FDIC. FDIC insurance is inflationary, by the way, because the only reason the banks are protected is because the federal government prints more money to bail you out. That's a problem. I'm fundamentally opposed to CDs in retirement. Everybody's got to have a bank for some savings account and some money they can get at real quickly. With proper planning, you don't need that to any larger extent. But that's just my opinion. So take it for what it's worth.
Absolutely, Brian. Good subject today. I appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, no, thanks for being back. So everybody, thank you for joining us for episode 80, Annuity Straight Talk Podcast. Bank failures, market update with John Ballmer. Been great. I'll be down to see John here in a few weeks. So
yeah, just less than a month. Looking forward to seeing you.
I'm headed on my road trip, the Annuity Straight Talk road trip. Leaving tomorrow, and I'll be on the road when this comes out. So anyway, everybody, if you want to get a hold of me, if you want to talk to John, you got to talk to me. So you call me at 800-438-5121. Schedule a call with me. Top right corner says schedule a call. Any page on annuitystraighttalk.com. Subscribe, like, comment, follow, podcast, share them if you want to get this to your friends and tell everybody about it. But anyway, thank you again for joining us for episode number 80. We will see you next week with episode 81. Okay, bye.
You have been listening to Annuity Straight Talk. The preceding information is for informational and educational purposes only and does not represent tax, legal, or investment advice. The views expressed by guests on this program are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of Annuity Straight Talk or its partners. No information presented today should be acted upon without meeting with the qualified and licensed professional. It is important that you read all insurance contract disclosures carefully before making a purchase decision. Guarantees are based on the financial strength and claims paying ability of the insurance company.